Hey, Cortana, play Home Gadget Geeks from TuneIn.
And now, Home Gadget Geeks on TuneIn.
This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 299. Paul, you missed it by one show. Recorded on March 2nd, 2017. Here at Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. We never had winter. It's over. Maybe snowed twice. And of course, we post a show with world-class show notes. Yeah, they've been lacking a little bit. Out at TheAverageGuy.tv. You can also join us on our live mobile app now available for you through Spreaker. I want to thank LastPass for their sponsorship of that mobile app. Easy to subscribe to. Just head out to homegadgetgeeks.com. Big buttons there for both Android and iPhone if you want to listen on the road. And they're supposed to be. Spreaker has told me they're going to update those apps to allow you to download those, download the programs as well. But if you want to try it and you're on the road, homegadgetgeeks.com. Thanks for their support for both Spreaker for what they do and LastPass for their sponsorship of the app. We now have a Patreon link on our live page if you want to head out. No, that's not true either. On our front page at theaverageguy.tv, head out to theaverageguy.tv/support if you want to go right to it. Great way to support the show, $1 in $5 plans. If you're interested in joining us, head out to theaverageguy.tv/support. Well, hey, a couple updates before I bring Paul in here. Last week, I did a weird thing on you guys as we Mike Howard and I recorded Ask the Podcast Coach on Saturday morning, actually, and I didn't think of it until Sunday afternoon. I thought, you know, this was good enough. Mike talked a lot about his hardware. It was less about podcasting, more about video and stuff, so I dropped that in the feed. I didn't get any negative feedback, so I guess it was okay. Gave you $298. Out there, $299 is tonight. I told you in the video last night that you guys can hear Sarah laughing behind me, right? I told you in the – you hear that? So I told you in the video last week that I had taken a physical and that my PSA scores had been off the chart. And they were really worried about that. I went in for a biopsy last week, and I told you I'd update you. And so those reports came back on Tuesday, zero cancer. So that's always a good deal. And just elevated levels of PSAs. So from this point on, just a little bit of meds to kind of take care of things. But many of you reached out, and I appreciate that. Just thanks for caring from that standpoint. Could have been a lot worse than it was, a little bit of medication to take care of things. But gentlemen, get your physicals. I can't emphasize that enough. Do not miss those physicals. Do that every year. I know it's a pain, literally, to get those things done. Super important. Go in and get your physicals done. Ladies that are listening, make sure your men get those physicals. I'm just saying. Do I have to say it one more time? So go in there. Super important to get that done. And everything's good here at the Collison House, but I just thought I'd update you on that. Well, Paul Brehren is joining us this week. Paul, it's been 6 or 7 or 8 months. I didn't go back and count, but it's always good to have you on. Lots of things have changed for you. Welcome to Home Gadget Geeks.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for inviting me. And so glad to hear you're doing well. Because I was listening last week live while I was driving around Boston and what your hardware setup, and then you got a little personal there on us. So yeah, how nice for you to tell us that.
Thank you. I've been podcasting with you guys for 6 years now, and it'll be 7 this December. And, you know, the listening numbers haven't really changed that much, and they're really, really steady. And so I just know we've got a lot of guys and some gals, mostly guys, but a few gals now. Thank you, Emily. Who come out and Paul, it becomes an important, you guys kind of become family to me. And, you know, I think it's important to sometimes just disclose those things. It's a little scary. And at least for me, it just brought to light the fact that we gentlemen don't always take care of our bodies the best, or don't eat the best, or don't get physicals and stuff like that. And so really good to just to be able to say, hey, at least the report was good. I was ready either way. Like, it was going to be like, if it was going to be really bad, I'm young, we could fight this thing, not a big deal. I was kind of ready to go either way. Certainly a lot cheaper to do a $30 prescription each month than it would be to pay for the surgery and all the other stuff that has to go into that kind of deal. So it's just good to be healthy, but thanks for saying that, Paul. I appreciate it.
You know, it's the best PSA I've ever heard.
There you go. Nicely done. I appreciate it. No, it was good. It was good. It was a good one. I brought you on. I wanted to catch up with you a little bit. Since the last time we had you on, you were working for a different company, and a lot of things have changed. You continue to publish over at tinkertry.com on your website. And there's a lot of great information over there. You know, I would say that's really a site. A lot of folks, if you're really interested, Paul, you do a great job of posting. You're very thorough. You test things out. It's very specialized in a lot of ways, but if you don't have that one bookmarked or you're not checking it out regularly, tinkertry.com will get you there and you should keep up with it. Paul, one of the things I love about what you do on your site is if you have updates, you just go in and edit the post and then put a little update thing in there. And so it's always kind of the most current information that's out there. So I really appreciate that. You do some good stuff. Where in the world do you find time to even update TinkerTry? How does that work?
You know, I don't watch much TV. That's a big part of it, right? 5 years ago when I was getting into it, you kind of make some decisions about what you're going to do evenings and weekends. So yeah, you've seen I port my heart and soul and spare time into writing articles that I find fun to share with people. Even better is when you meet people, you know, at meetups and so forth too, right? And get to nerd out about the same kinds of things.
So, right on. You do a great job. I've always appreciated what you've done for the community. Talk a little bit about the job change. So take us back a little bit. I know you've been chronicalizing it there. It's not even a word, but tell us, for those that don't know, give us a little update on what you're doing now.
Yeah, sure. So I worked at IBM for 21 years, and just before Christmas, I got an interesting offer from VMware, and I took that job on and started January 9th. That's a short version of the story. There's a whole lot more to it than that, and it goes back a ways, like many people's career sagas.
Well, did some of that, so I mean, you've been a VM guy, you've talked VMware on our show lots. Yeah. I assume that played into the kind of them coming after you. That was because you had done it and documented it and talked about it and all that stuff. That kind of made that easy for them to kind of identify you, right?
Yeah, sure. if you look at a blog as a resume online, it's not recommended as the ideal job search approach. You know, 5 years, 850 articles is not the easy way to find it. It wasn't all about that, right? This is something I built that I hope to keep for a long time. Wherever I'm working, right, to keep blogging about it, I've quite enjoyed that. But back to the career story, going public did lead to some things. So those 21 years with IBM, up until the last 7 years, I was working all over the place, 35 of 50 states. That didn't lend itself well to, you know, blogging. It also didn't lend itself to talking about it much because some of it was very secret clearance work and customers that certainly wouldn't want me talking about it. So even if I wasn't a podcast at that time, there wouldn't be too much I could talk about. So there was advantages to anonymity and not being on the net in some ways. But that kind of went out the window when I was finally working from home. So I'm very thankful that IBM, after 15 years into that career, 14 years, I finally got to work from home pretty much full time and spend more time with family. And I worked hard and was on the phone a lot and essentially on call until December 31st of last year, doing that role of enterprise storage support. And so after the storage was sold, often involving SSDs, which is our world in our home labs, right? I'd be the guy that companies would call upon. And right here in my neck of the woods. So finally, after that long career flying all over the place, I got to meet people right in New England, where I live. So it was a really good run that way. And finally being home and not in airports as much gave me some more time, evenings and weekends, to do my own thing and blog about it. And that's led to only good things, including, my trip to Germany, where you had me on that podcast about two years and 3 months, right?
Well, that was awesome, yeah.
That was helping write a red book. So there was a catch to that trip to Germany for a month. You got to write a book or help work on one. And we produced some videos there. And that led to speaking at VMworld, meeting this VMware guy who spoke about this thing called vSANs, which was a bit of a mystery to me 2 years ago, which led to him ending up being a manager, ending up with a job hire ticket, talking to me, and it worked out. He's just one of dozens of people I met at many companies that were interesting to me. You never know where those little conversations you have at a user group will lead. And that's kind of the point of the story. Putting myself out there where people may have actually read something I've done or heard of me before I met them, that certainly helped when meeting them face-to-face at user groups and so forth. So again, not the easy way to find a job, but it is pretty nice when you're reading a job post that seems like a pretty darn good, like 85% plus match. many of them I'd read, it's only like 50%, you know, it's a stretch on the other 50, and you're like, should I play, you know? So yeah. But it was really all about looking for the latest and greatest leading edge, bleeding edge kind of thing. And what I'm doing at VMware now is actually pretty bleeding edge. It's more me thinking about what's 2, 3, 5 years from now. And that's how I've always been on my blog. All right. So a new opportunity came my way and I took it.
Yeah, that's good. Congratulations on that. Can you talk a little bit about, so what are kind of your roles and responsibilities? You said you're looking ahead, but what does that translate into for VMware?
Yeah, I think to answer that question, it might be helpful to start by going backwards a little bit. So my blog's been about using SSDs from day one, way back in 2011. And I first started using them for caching RAID controllers. So you remember Home Labs and Home Server Show and all of that, where we'd put together a bunch of 2 terabyte drives, or back then 1 terabyte drives. And it was for family videos and other stuff, the large files that needed multiple terabytes of storage. So I create a RAID array, but it was slow. So I buy a $600 RAID controller and I speed it up with caching reads and writes, ideally. Didn't work out so great. It's very enterprise-y focused stuff from LSI or Adaptec or companies you've heard of with RAID controllers. And ironically, I had a drive fail the day before I was going to Germany. So I get to talk my wife through putting a drive in to repair a RAID array while I'm gone. Not really wanted to go through that again. She was,
hey, you got it done though. That's pretty amazing.
So anyhow, that led to looking for an alternative in NVMe, a tiny M.2 NVMe specifically, the gum stick form factor. Got one right here somewhere. A little far out of my microphone reach, but you know, gum stick memory.
Is that the one on your blog from December?
Yeah, let me see if I can bring a picture. Well, you can kind of see it
behind. Here, I can bring it up. While you're talking about it, I can bring it up, yeah.
Like a Samsung 950 Pro, that changed everything for a home lab enthusiast. You now had something called QDepth that was decent, way better than any SATA drive. Okay, yep, that's a device that can hold 4 M.2 drives, for instance. Thank you, Jim. And why did that change everything? Well, this thing called QDepth meant instead of a RAID controller with QDepth and a buffer on it, why don't you just buy a gum stick piece of memory, lay it down the motherboard, screw in to hold it down, and you're done. And now you can suddenly run VMware or Hyper-V with incredible speed, including multiple VMs at once in your home. So no longer were you feeling like you were changing a workstation into a, you know, Windows home server that had okay speed, but it's just SATA drives. And when you start hitting it with 2, 3, 4 VMs at once, things bog down, right? One VM's backing up and it makes everyone else drags down. You buy M.2 NVMe storage, everything speeds up. So it was a huge jump forward, and that arrived with the ZMD chipset back in 2015, late really, second half of 2015 and well through 2016. And that chipset's still going strong with 2 10 gig and 2 1 gig interfaces. Why am I telling you all that? Because it plays into my job. So when you put NVMe, is now that could be our future caching layer for SSDs. So SSDs have become kind of old and slow in a way. They're on the SATA bus, which is a legacy interface. And that's what excited me. It's like, oh, this stuff I'm fiddling with on evenings and weekends and in my home lab is moving to the enterprise in that direction. It came to consumers first in an affordable fashion with things like Samsung 950. But guess what? The enterprises are going to be starting to pick up on not using SATA or SAS anymore for their SSDs and just putting rows of storage in PCI slots and server rooms. And guess what? That's what my day job is now all about, is helping customers say, instead of buying some giant rack stuffed with storage and attaching with fiber channel and this thing called a SAN, storage area network, what if you pluck the drives out, same kind of technology, shove them right in next to the hypervisor in the server itself, give that a shot and use this thing called what was called virtual SAN, virtual storage area network, or now called vSAN. That's the name. It doesn't mean virtual anymore, just vSAN. What if you use vSAN instead, where that fast storage, whether it's a spinning drive and an SSD caching layer, remember my story from 5 years ago? Same thing, 5 years later, or all flash storage arrays, which now with dedupe and compression, your price is about the same. So you don't even bother with spinning rest anymore from here forward. So that got me thinking this could be interesting. So it shook up my world, like personally, as I started having those epiphany moments a little while back. And then as I started to realize this could be interesting for the kinds of customers I work with. And I like customers big and small. So my accounts are in the Northeast and they're commercial, which is a giant customer base of tens of thousands of potential customers. So Northeast being Maine to Virginia to Michigan. It's a pretty big Northeast region. So that's me. And I now continue to do what I was doing last year. 15 times I spoke about things like NVMe storage and VMware and how fun it is and nice to have this stuff in your home lab that runs faster than anything you have at work. Well, now I get to do the same kind of presentations, but I'm there as a VMware employee who's also a blogger, and I'll be speaking at the New York City VMUG next month. And it's already a busy year, and it's only beginning of March. Last year I spoke 15 times, and this year part of my job is speaking. Those were not last year. Those were me as a blogger going off and doing these presentations. This year I get to do it as part of my job. So I'm pretty excited about that. I enjoy being in front of people. And I did that 4 hours ago live and here in Hartford, Connecticut. I spoke for my first time publicly as a VMware employee. And it was cool.
What did you cover? What was the topic?
Day two operations with vSAN. What that meant was half the room raised their hands. They've already bought into vSAN or tried it. Now they want to know what's it look like to operate it and look at to troubleshooting and performance. So it's a little more advanced presentation. It was only half an hour. It was kind of a teaser, but VMware does a good job with click-through demos. So I gave him a boatload of links. And right on my homepage, there's a public speaking green button over to the right there. You click on that, it shows everything I'm up to, including my future presentation. And including the presentation I gave today, actually. It's right there under Hartford, March 2nd today.
Paul, from a cost perspective, when we think, I mean, is it still only enterprise? I mean, okay, for the average guy, when we think about a home lab, a home server, home storage, is this kind of technology there yet for us, or are we still a little ways away from a price perspective?
Yeah, no, okay. Yeah, let's talk about that. So I'll hold the word vSAN aside for a moment. I'll just talk about NVMe, those gum stick SSDs I was talking about that are 5 or 6 times faster than any 2.5-inch, you know, legacy-style laptop SSD, right? That M.2 NVMe style of NVMe, absolutely obtainable. You know, down to $100 for small capacities. 2 terabytes now available in the Samsung 960.
Is 2 terabyte? You're saying that's small?
No. 2 terabytes on the big side. Small would be 128 gig, and those are down. You know, getting cheaper. Yep. But you know, even 1 terabyte. Let's see, what are they? 300 or 400 now in some models. So yeah, it's gotten much better. But the servers themselves, an Intel Nook, $500, they have M.2 slots these days. In fact, that's all they have. You can take a Nook and you'll find SATA ports in there, but you'd have to hang the 2.5-inch drive outside of the Nook because it doesn't even fit inside, unlike the Skulltrail one, the one with the, you know, gamer-looking thing.
Yeah.
So that is forward-thinking, meaning the consumer tech picked up in this M.2 NVMe as an interface of choice. And what do you know, my Dell laptop, with the 15.4-inch screen, 4K display from VMware. You open it up under the hood, and there's an article right on my homepage about this, and you have a bay for a 2.5-inch drive, which I had to create by putting a smaller battery in, and you have a 1 terabyte NVMe SSD in there for standard corporate issue employees like myself. That's awesome, right? That's moving forward. So you might even own a M.2 NVMe drive, and you don't even know it. If your laptop's thin and skinny, or there you go. That's what it looks like. So in that picture you've got there, if you could scroll down a little, Jim. And keep going. Okay, that's me using an external drive adapter until I had that battery that I needed. Okay, scroll down a little further. I should have done this, but all right, a little more. And we can have a giant picture we can click on. Keep going. And that's a video. There you go. Click the big picture if you could. All right, and then just hit right arrow on your keyboard and you'll see it almost animated with the, there you go. So I had to put a smaller battery in to fit that 2 terabyte 850. Right above it is the gum stick. So that gives you a sense of scale. If you guys aren't familiar with what Jim's pointing to there, that's what I mean by gum stick. It's way smaller than any laptop style SSD that you see pictured right below.
And what's the size on that one?
That's 1 terabyte.
Which is plenty on it from an OS standpoint, right? That's plenty, right?
Yep. And then I have 2 terabytes in the SSD below it that I've owned for a year and a half. I've banged away at that one. And I'm nowhere near the terabytes written for its life cycle. I think it's 300 terabytes written rating. And I'm at something like 70 terabytes written, TBW, that rating's called.
Is the next
so you can wear these things out. Yeah.
Is the next one the speed test?
Yeah. And part of what my captions here, they're a little small there, but they're trying to show people. Do you remember I showed you that little cable? If you can just click away from that anywhere else. Scroll, click away from that as well, outside of the picture there. Scroll up a bit. And that little cable, it's like $20. Keep going up. That's the adapter kit to get the hard drive in that machine. Oops. If you have a Dell XPS 15, by the way, it's the same animal, pretty much.
This one.
There we go. That little picture that I tweeted out, that adapter. Actually, can you click on that? I'm curious the price on Amazon. I think it was $20-something. And that $16.95. All right. That's the magic of USB 3.1. So now you have a laptop. You take a your 2.5 inch SSD from maybe a broken laptop, or from me moving one from one machine to another when I didn't have anything for a bit. That let me boot an external 2 terabyte SSD right from my new Dell laptop. So
now this was the magic of Windows to go, right? That's what that made this work this way?
Yeah, exactly. So Windows to go, you might remember if you're at Home Server Show Meetup or you've heard of, you needed Enterprise Windows 10 and you could create a USB media. And Paul Thurrott talked about this like a month ago. I still talk, good stuff, right? But you needed Enterprise Windows 10, and who has that? Generally, you don't. Now with Windows 10 Pro, the latest build anyway, 1607, I just simply popped the drive out and booted on a totally different laptop. I did have to turn off secure boot, so that would be the gotcha. You get this nasty warning like, I don't know, I'm not going to boot off of this. And I had to turn on boot from Thunderbolt support. Those two things in the BIOS. Once I did that, it just seamlessly booted Windows 10. It found the Dell hardware, and I had myself a Windows 10. Until I had a chance to get that drive adapter kit and the new smaller battery to make it all fit. So my story, everything I've just said, applies to Dell XPS 15 owners. Same thing as this corporate laptop, as for form factor and innards, and a very popular, you know, laptop that you see in the Microsoft store, right? It's been there for a year or so. So yeah, little success story with a $17 part.
Anything else in this post I should know about? This is pretty good. This gives you a great example. If you're watching the video, this gives you a great example of what Paul does on his on his side. I'm sorry, just Sarah's having such a good time.
We hear it. It's great.
Yeah, she's just having a great. So twice I've sent her texts to say, hey, you know, well, you guys can't see me. Hold on, let me turn this off. This is just a little bit of my world. So twice I've sent some texts that say shh and hey, and she's not. I mean, she's on her phone 24/7, except while she's in there laughing like crazy. So it's all good. She hasn't done this in a long time, so it is a little distracting on the backside to hear that, but I think everybody's right with it. From a form factor perspective, Paul, do you think that M.2 is that? I mean, is that the way we're moving from a, you know, when we think about a laptop and hardware? I know I've got this little Dell, I think it's a 3030, right? It's a little square one that came with a really not very powerful CPU, but they were incredibly cheap and it's got M.2 in there. And I upgraded that to 64 gig and I put Windows 10 and the fast ring on it. Are we moving that way for everything, do you think? Are the days of SATA drives pretty much over for the most part? I mean, we'll have to phase them out, of course, but is that the way we're headed?
Certainly for consumer products and laptops, they'll sometimes solder them on, so you won't even be able to pull them out if it's Apple, right? But that is the tech, NVMe. And, you know, I have a picture I should show you. Let me share out my desk here quick. But yes, is the short answer. In the enterprise, what you do is you stuff a bunch of them on a PCI card, and you come up with an 8 terabyte SSD that is jammed in one PCI slot. Now you're making a good use of data center space, right? One PCI slot, 8 terabytes on there. And essentially, if you were to pull off the giant aluminum heatsink, you'd see something like a bunch of these chips in a row. But the basic tech, that NVMe acronym, is here to stay. And my most recent post is actually about what kind of comes after it. It takes it further. So we've dumped SATA and SAS. SAS was in the enterprise, SATA in your home. We moved to NVMe, that's here now in the last 2 years, coming on strong. And then finally, we moved to something called NVDIMMs, or also known as Intel Optane, is their branding. But it takes the same idea forward. Let me share this out.
Here, I can throw that up. Is that the right?
I got it. I should get Google Hangouts doing this. Let me share my desk, but I'm trying. Drag control room. Screen share, slowly showing just the right window. Come on. There we go. Application window finally came up. Okay. Resolution wise, how's that look to you? Can you read my font size?
It'll take a second. There we go. Yeah, I think it's good.
Reasonable sized? Okay.
Yeah.
So this picture is Intel's marketing that just snuck out February 19th. They didn't really make a splash yet, but you're seeing an M.2 slot filled with something called Optane memory. What the heck is that? Well, that means you could pull out juice from the motherboard and this thing holds on to whatever was on it. Yeah, don't we have that already? Well, yeah, but it's even faster than M.2 NVMe. So this could be your future caching layer where you have a 2.5 inch SSD. Do you remember Intel RST, that acronym from a few years ago, and they had a caching layer? Well, this is another stab at it. So for consumer tech, you might get a chip like this in a system you have. You have a 2.5 inch drive, and this is kind of your turbo boost for your 2 terabyte SSD. So you got that mass storage for videos you save or whatever. And then you have this super small 32 or 64 gig Optane layer of ridiculously fast cache that can also do cool magic like make suspend and resume really fast on a laptop, right? So that's step one. Next would be enterprise stuff. And the article gets a little bit into that. I'm going to scroll down a little and show you what the heck. I keep talking about NVMe. What is it? There it is. SAS and SATA, the big purple goo that makes latency creep in, goes away. So the bottom row here is NVM Express, they call it. NVMe is now what it's called. They show pictured an enterprise Intel card that's full, you know, PCI slot with aluminum heatsink. But it's the same idea. There's no SAS drivers. There's no SATA drivers. It was designed with flash in mind. So latency goes down and throughput. That's, you know, that's what they're harping on there. Okay, scrolling down a little further. Crosspoint, cool. They got a teaser video all about it. And then finally, the enterprise comes next where you get PCI form factors. And it looks like they're calling it a 375 gigabyte capacity P4800X. It'll be crazy expensive, right? That's enterprise. So as a mass storage device of 375 gig, which is not that big, you know, about a little more than a third of a terabyte, that's where it starts in the enterprise. So we're not there yet. It's not going to be affordable for probably years in the home lab as your mass storage. So instead, you get teased with a little thin caching layer in the latest laptops coming out in Kaby Lake or Kaby Lake, however people say it. And that's your taste of Optane of the future in a tiny little 32 or 64 gig dose.
Yeah, it'll come soon enough. I mean, it'll be here pretty quick, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it will take new chipsets, new BIOS, new motherboards that support it. You can see this motherboard, they print it right on there. Intel Optane memory ready. A little marketing from Intel saying, hey, time to begin a new motherboard if you want to be able to do this. Now, would you do that for a little tiny slice of 32 or 64 gig cache? No, probably not. But if you're buying a new laptop that's, you know, $1,000 and up in the future, and they're trying to fight the other guys who are in that premium market, this might be their differentiator, right? So I think it'll take some time before you see that pervade. Or it might fail, which happened with their previous attempts at caching. People weren't too big a fan of having a RAID in a laptop with a caching layer. It had some problems 3-4 years ago. So we'll see if they pull it off this time.
Well, there's always the high cost of being on the edge. And sometimes it's great and sometimes it's not so great. You know, you run into those problems where it's some things are a little before their time and they make it into the mainstream and, you know, we get kind of the best of it. So pretty cool.
Yep.
Go into a little bit more depth. You said you had to switch laptops, right? When you did that. And so you had some problems. Did you have some problems with the old laptop that you needed to get stuff off, or tell that story again, just as you, to use this device we looked at with an SSD drive?
Sure.
Give us some more detail on that.
Yeah. So, turning in gear from one job and going to another, you might be short on hardware for a bit. So what I did was, this told the story here, Lenovo Yoga that I talked about on the air, I think 4 years ago, hand-me-down from the family, had Windows 10 on it. I'm like, I just got to get this 2 terabyte drive that I use to run my website and read personal email. I do all kinds of stuff with this 2 terabyte SSD that I've had for 50 months. Not easy to move it somewhere else with any kind of decent speed. So I'm like, how about I just get creative? And well, the old days, old laptops used to have something called eSATA ports. Those are gone. So I'm like, okay, how about USB 3? That'll let me limp along with the Lenovo Yoga, shove the 2 terabyte SSD in this Inditex enclosure, and help me limp along for all of under $25. So now I had a way in early January to have a slow but some version of something functioning in my house. Because you remember, I'm the guy who runs a super server workstation. I'm limited on hardware. I'm trying not to have a ton of old machines laying around and burning watts. So this helped me limp along at USB 3 speeds, not really impressive. The cool thing is, once I got the new laptop, this thing, the Dell Precision 5510, this $17 device we already talked about helped me run it at full speed externally, and that's what's pictured here. Simple $17 cable, turn on Thunderbolt boot support, and boom, you have an SSD that's laying outside your laptop booting at full speed, running benchmarks as if it's inside the laptop. Pretty cool. It actually ran fairly cool too, right? As you can imagine with being open air.
Yeah. Because
laptops aren't so good at cooling their SSDs. They're generally under wrist, nowhere near the fan, right?
Yeah, that's why the performance dips, right? The longer you use them, right? You start
throttle.
It's great at first, and then as you're using it, the performance begins to dip on you.
There's two aspects to that too. There's a bit of a buffer. So consumer drives, if you bang away them for 5-10 seconds, you're probably not exhausting that buffer. Then you start saving something huge, and then you see the performance dip. And that can be true for reads and writes, depends on the SSD you're talking about. But then you go longer, like 30 seconds or a minute, and they heat up, and it gets even slower still. Thermal stuff starts to kick in. So that's it. That's kind of my story of my pleasant surprise of how am I going to limp along until I get this battery that allows me to put this hard drive inside? Well, $16, $17 fixed that, and I had full speed, and I was uncrippled. It just looked a little goofy on the airplane, hoping this thing wouldn't pull out in the middle, because Windows wouldn't like that very much.
Not a lot of room either.
And it was backed up before I'd imagined flying with this thing, right? If I had a total disaster on the road, it's okay. That 2 terabytes would not be lost. I'm not that crazy.
Yeah.
I'm still using Veeam Endpoint Backup for that, by the way, which they now call Veeam. They renamed Veeam Agent, but still been very good to me for 2 years now plus all my
family machines. Yeah, you've been, you know, about the time we all kind of got away from Home Server Show and backup and some of those other things, you started talking about Veeam. And is it still free? And then two, from as it stands today, if someone was going to use that as a backup solution, what's the right way to get into it?
Yeah, no, it's free download. And let's see.
Paul's got an article.
So yeah, support. Here's the cool thing. Windows Home Server, you come from that world and you were able to back up and restore server variants of Windows. Well, Veeam let me do that all along, which is great, because if you cut loose to other products, the consumer ones tend to not let you touch Server 2012 or 2016. So that's the good story here, is that it's still free and it still backs up both server and client. And that's good. And they always vowed it would stay free and all that. So yeah, something to try if you haven't given it a try yet. Let me see if I can find.
What are you running it on? What kind of hardware are you running it on?
Oh, any old laptop. I mean, that Yoga you saw, or the Dell laptop, or corporate laptops that are encrypted with BitLocker, doesn't matter. It handles all that just fine. Bare metal restore as well. And it can do it to a local drive or network share, just like Home Server used to be able to. And it does a good job at compressing and dedoping itself, as it does daily backups.
So it's just a client from that standpoint.
Correct. You can back up to a file network share or even a NAS. So there's lots of options for VMs. That's kind of a separate topic. But yeah, here we go. Okay. January 26th is still actually beta. So the agent is beta, but for a year and a half, version 1.5, that was called Veeam Endpoint Backup, that's still available, and that's, you know, free. They didn't change that much. The user interface and all that looks quite simple and easy. They've added some paid versions, but that doesn't cripple the existing capability. They have it right there. There's the different options. And as you should always do as a blogger, I will admit, in that order, I had played with Veeam software for years. They ended up buying an ad spot on my site. That's kind of the order you want, something you've used for years. You feel better about helping your site be sponsored from that when you already believed in it before you even had them as an ad. It is, as you know, hard to get ads or any kind of sponsors. So
yeah,
there are other options out there, obviously. Nikivo is another I've tried for backing up VMs. And Acronis, another very popular ones too.
Acronis is kind of where I've landed at this point. Has been for me. It's just rock solid. It works great. You know, it's got a couple other tools that comes with it. Ken is saying it needs data dedupe. Is there a dedupe process with Veeam, or is it not dedupe in files?
Yeah, no, good question. So if you have, I don't know, 10 copies of Windows 10 backed up to one network share, nope, doesn't have the Windows Home Server dedupe beauty there. The thing is, Windows Home Server, as it became 2012, it got slower on me. Anything beyond a 2 terabyte machine I was backing up, like 3 or 4 terabytes, it could take me 40, 50 hours to restore. So if something bad happened, I would have to hope it would happen on a Friday, so I might be ready by Monday. So that dedupe came at a big cost. It seemed like it tipped over when you got past 2 terabyte backups. So I don't know what to say there. I never resolved it. I used that product for years. But I'm a whole lot happier with backups that run at full wire speed.
Basically, well, storage is cheap, though, too, right?
Correct. I mean,
when we think about it.
10 terabyte SSD. 10 terabyte spinning drive. Problem solved, right? I mean, for all. So I'm not saying that's great news, but yeah, I would admit that. Now, if you back up to one of their repositories, yeah, you'll get that, but that's enterprise and now you're talking money. You and I were talking about free, so I was sticking with free.
Right.
So,
No, that's good. So that's a model a lot like CrashPlan in the sense that you can do it locally, you can do it between, you know, anywhere you can get it, anywhere you could get storage, right? Anywhere you can send it to, it'll let you send it there basically, right? or they have a paid plan on the enterprise side, right? That you could take advantage of it, and you back it up to their cloud. Is that how that works?
Let's see, cloud offerings. Yeah, no, your own personal cloud for the free product. Oh, you'd be okay. Back up to a
partner. No, but I mean, if you were going to pay for it, from an enterprise standpoint, is that their cloud?
Veeam Cloud Connect is what they seem to be calling. Yep, so their cloud, their branding. I thought Amazon or something showed. I don't know. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised. There it is. Azure is there, right?
Right.
So we don't see Amazon. So whatever, they're working with Microsoft. Let me just say this too. I kind of hack their stuff, meaning I take their EXE that wasn't supposed to run on Windows 10, but thousands of people want to figure out, Windows 10 is beta. I want to back it up because I've been using Veeam Endpoint for Windows 8.1 with such success. Why not have it work on Windows 10? So I took the EXE, I right-click it and expand it with 7-zip. Say, hey, the EXE is really a zip, right? Kind of can be. You can see the files inside of it. Then I experimented with how do you install the components in what order? And what do you know? I kind of broke through and got it to work. Not really a hack. It's more like a creative way to get the thing installed in an operating system it's not supported on. I did that again for Windows Server 2016. That we had a year of beta testing where we had a backup product that actually helped you out of trouble. Wasn't supported, but what's nice is instead of Veeam like slapping me or getting angry at that, they know tens of thousands of people read those articles that wouldn't have played with the code. They just wanted to use their code in a completely unsupported fashion. My articles were clear on that. And the nice thing is, you know, it's okay. It's an ecosystem where I threw some of my time in it, just like I used to with Windows Home Server, to get the thing not do the, you know, the domain skip join thing, that trickery we had to do. Mm-hmm. It was the same kind of vibe I got getting Veeam Endpoint to work on operating systems. It wasn't quite ready to support yet. And it wasn't as easy as right-clicking, turning on compatibility mode. No, I had to go a little further than that to get it to install. But it's fun, you know, writing that and 10,000 people have read it a month later, like, wow, that's a lot of people. I just wanted to back up their Windows 10 beta or Windows Server 2016. You know, you're helping a lot of people who know full well they're, you know, doing something unsupported. Then when it came out, it was supported just fine very quickly. So it wasn't like we were orphaned or waiting for months with Veeam. They tend to get support out very fast.
How big are they as a company?
I guess they're kind of the 800-pound gorilla, the VMware ESXi world, backing up that stuff. I don't know how many billions, whatever. They're huge. You haven't heard their name, though, if you're more of an MSDN kind of person.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. That was quite a pitch about Veeam. But, yeah, that's a very practical thing. People need to back up their laptops still. You get ransomware these days, right?
Yeah.
That's bad if that hits. So, it's good to have recourse, whatever it is you pick. Something so you can do a bare metal backup and restore.
Yeah, I think if folks are listening to this and they haven't looked at Veeam yet, Paul's probably the authority on it from a backup standpoint. He's got tons of articles out on his site where you'd want to go out and kind of read about and get up to speed. It is like an Acronis from the way you use it, as I understand. When we left Home Server and shut mine down, although I still run a 2016 server at the house, and I could theoretically, you know, back up some of this stuff to it. It's just too much hassle. You know, moved over to Acronis. Veeam is another way of doing that if you want to check that out. Paul, what are you running from a server stuff at home? Has there been, you had some monster servers in the day. Same stuff? You upgraded? What are you running from a home lab or from a home server standpoint?
And VZilla is what I call the monster. It was large, gaming style, right? That's big and heavy. So for me, it was an upgrade to go to this picture on the right. Much smaller. Whole lot easier to lift, and I flew with it in overhead luggage like four different times last year. Even on the smallest plane, I could jam this, you know, sub 15-pound server, stuff full of up to 3.5-inch drives. So you can fit a whole lot of storage in there, coupled with NVMe drives and then a PCI slot for potentially four or more. So you could have 9 drives if you wanted to pack it in there, despite it's less than a cubic foot. So for me, that's a win because it was a whole lot faster than the behemoth picture I just showed you as well. And unlike Core i7, these don't iterate every year. You know, Xeons take 3-4 years between generations. So this Xeon's here to stay for at least through this year, it looks like. There's no rumors of a new Xeon D coming out this year. In fact, the product line proliferated, and now they came out with a 12 core that is sold in this tower that I helped them work on. So anyhow, this Intel Xeon D line goes all the way down to little guys. So I'll click compare right here. And this table is pretty useful in that it has the Intel Nook, the beloved Intel Nook that lots of people own. Here it is pictured right on top of the server, the tower. One U box is below it. You might remember I flew to a home server, now kind of David McCabe's meetup there, right, in Indianapolis. And I flew with one of these and one of these, comparing and contrasting. The price of those are both under 1,000. Loaded with RAM, you're getting close to 1,000 on the Nook. You can get up to 32 gig of RAM. The one below it, you can go to 128 gig of RAM. And even that's still under 1,600. I think with 64 gig of RAM, it's about 1,200. And that's still the same motherboard as the Mini Tower that many have sold. Two 10 gig interfaces, two 1 gig, and M.2 on the motherboard. So that ZND is proliferating, not just a Supermicro story, but across many other vendors too, particularly rack mount gear. It's the Mini Tower form factor, though, with the family acceptance factor and a slower fan speed that's quieter. That's the popular one, right? Just like it was with HP and Dell and other companies that sold small cubes of, you know, fun a little while ago. So it's good. There's something out there. I won't say there's a lot out there, right? There's not a lot of choices in something in a Mini Tower form factor these days. But at least the ones that are there have gotten very powerful. And this screen tries to show people who play with VMware, what does it mean? You take the gigahertz times the number of cores and you realize, oh, I got 16.8 gigahertz of this thing called CPU capacity is what VMware calls it. You step up to 12 cores and now you got 25 gigahertz of CPU capacity. This table I put together tries to show you, oh, okay. If you get an Intel Nook, it's a good start and it's certainly cheaper. The Skull Trail one, the price is down to like 560, all right, with no RAM, mind you, it's a kit. But this thing called cores times gigahertz CPU capacity is down to 10. So you now get an idea if you have sort of a number of how it scales. Okay, you're getting quite a beast when you get a 12 core, and I've actually found some workloads that really make that shine, like 4K video rendering, pretty much linear. You buy a box with more cores, you pay more, and you also greatly reduce your 4K video render time, which actually, strangely, did not use the GPU. Camtasia just uses CPU cores. Hmm. And as many cores as you have and throw at it, it just gets faster the more cores you have. So here you're seeing 23 minutes versus 80 minutes for the cheap one on the left. So you're getting what you pay for. So yeah, the ZND story hasn't changed other than you now have more low-end and high-end options. It started in the middle is what they released in late 2015. And then 2016, it just proliferated with all sizes. With different size heat sinks, basically. They all look the same. They're all 6.7-inch square motherboard. Tiny motherboards with everything jammed right on there. And this is me doing my measurements. Why? Because no one else on the web was doing it, and it annoyed me. Like, someone just measure how loud these things are. So there I got a watt meter, right?
That's awesome.
And then here it shows kind of the spectral curve of what kind of noise it puts out. Here we've got a watt meter on the right. In the middle, decibel meter. I misspoke there. And then a stopwatch to show me banging away at it to thermally stress the Nook and make it spin up and get noisy. So I had fun with that. And that's me saying Nook is also great for some people, especially if you want a GPU and you're doing light gaming and then only occasionally using something like VMware for server. Great. It's a mobile CPU and it's going to save you money. But as you know, and you mentioned on your video render podcast last week with Mike Howard, holy smokes, the hardware he uses, right? Desktop Core i7 is not the same as a mobile Core i7. And that's what this table is trying to show people. You really are getting impressive value as you move off to the right and you spend more if you need it, if you have a lot of workload, if you run any VMs. And VMware's product portfolio, now that I work at a software company, it's vast. You really need, this sounds crazy, if you're trying to run everything that VMware makes and markets and sells and allows employees to download and use, 128 gig of RAM, you could actually use that, which sounds crazy, right? But it's not that crazy when laptops are starting to arrive with 16 and 32 gig of RAM, right?
Yeah.
So that's our world. It's moved forward. And Core i7 of the past where you had 32 gig that you were locked to all the way to 2014, that's finally in our rearview mirror. You've heard Intel get quite a lashing that, sorry, Apple getting quite a lashing that they paired with Intel on the latest Apple laptops and stopped at 16 gig, right? That sounds kind of archaic, doesn't it? So yeah. So there you go, Jim. So you asked what's new, and basically if people are interested in this, just click this little compare link, and there's all kinds of speeds and feeds to read and watts and decibels, and this stuff's very efficient is the take-home message. You can actually leave it running.
How long did it take you to write an article like that? What's with the research and the work and the, you know, what do you think, how many hours of effort are in a post like that? What do you think?
I got pictures. I'm looking at it to remember.
Acceptance factor, right?
The PTSD is coming back of all these screenshots and the script mousing around and grabbing it. Okay, I'm going to confess that sucker was probably 30 hours between the videos, editing the videos, putting together the screenshots, writing about it. That's a behemoth article. Not my average article, admittedly, but there was a lot of work to put into a table and updating a table. not the most fun work, but you need to do it because DIM prices went up recently.
Right.
So I went in February and said, hey, I got to raise these prices on the DIMs. Not a great story. DDR4 was down to 170 for a 32 gig DIM. Now it's above 300 on Amazon and actually a little below 300 at Wired Zone, who resells the system. So luckily their price somehow they're keeping it down. Not a great story there. And Samsung is having trouble with their 960s for SSDs, some constraints. So prices are not really awesome right now compared to a year ago, I'll admit. They went up like 20% for overall system cost.
Yep. Yeah. So and you said 30, you think 330 hours in the article?
This article, somewhere between 20 and 30 hours of my life were spent getting this together. Yeah. Video editing is not easy. And when you have 8 clips of different servers and moving them around and all, putting that video together and stitching it, it's arduous work, right? You look at 1 hour of video that came from 5 hours of raw video, it probably took you 7 hours of editing to put that together. That's the dirty secret of video editing. It's not fun. It's hard work.
It is a lot of work. Yeah. It's why I choose not to do too much of it, because you can get buried. I mean, on a weekend, it's gone. Your whole weekend's gone.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that's cool, Paul.
It was worth it. I get so many questions, right? If you get 10, 20, 30 questions a month about a particular topic and you can answer it with an article like that, you feel good about it.
Yeah. Yeah. What's a post, if I can ask, what's a post like that from a numbers standpoint? You got to have great SEO on that thing. I mean, it's just got to get pounded. Do you get some pretty good numbers on it?
Haven't looked. I'll look right now in that article.
All that work, Paul. Yeah, I mean, you're not.
Well, I have 850 articles, right? So I kind of write it. You're right. For the first month or so, I'll edit and update it. If something substantially changes, I'll go back 6 months or a year later and kind of add to it. But I admit I don't check each article's stats too often. I'm looking now on Google Analytics, and 8,000 unique people have read it and coming up in 10,000 page views. So yeah, that's pretty darn
possible. That's great. Yeah.
So it's That's exciting great. For me to think of all those people that are reporting through the stats, knowing that I couldn't Google or find anything when I looked for it. So it's fun meeting people in my profession as an IT career person who have actually stumbled across some of these articles over their days, right? Meeting them in person and talking about what they find valuable. That's gratifying, because honestly, people, only like 1 in 2,000 people actually bother to read a comment. I mean, write a comment. There's mostly lurkers, right? So with 1 in 2,000 commenting, you don't really have a vibe of what people are thinking, what you're writing. It's pretty cool to meet them face to face too.
No, right on. That's what makes the meetup so, what I think is so valuable, right? To get together, do it in person, hang out together, you know, those kinds of things. You know, it's a little expensive and we go out there, and I was just talking with Dave, you know, that he on Reset, his latest episode of Reset, he kind of announced the next meetup. We don't have a date yet, but... You know, and I've made 5 or 6 in a row, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to make this one this year. We've got a lot of stuff going on here with kids traveling around the country and such, and various things coming up. But it is really important, right? I mean, we do all this podcasting together, and then you know, it's good to see people in person. So, Paul, you were talking about the small form factor, and you know, I am clutching onto my N40L, which is just ancient at this point. Ironically, still runs Windows Server 2016 pretty well. I use it as a file store and some other stuff, and you know, kind of test out storage spaces and some of those things that Microsoft's doing on the server end of things. But those are good little boxes. And but when you showed me that the box that you put up here, if you were in the market right now, and maybe you showed it to us already, but if you were in the market for a home server, so to speak, or something to throw some drives in and put some software on, what do you think's the right, you know, when you think about the average guy, and what do you think's the right box for the average guy to buy right now? We all latched onto those HP microservers for the longest time. Is that still the right place to be, or what's your opinion on what do you think the right box is?
Well, I'm clearly biased because I've been working with ZND so much. But yeah, I still like having room for a 3.5-inch drive, which rules out all the 1U, you know, rack mount stuff. So for me personally, having a CPU that has grunt or horsepower that's similar to what you get in your, you know, primary workstation laptop, that you can leave running, idling around 30 watts, which is kind of awesome to leave it running at, you know, 24/7. ZND is absolutely still my choice. It's not anything like an Intel Atom, and it's a whole lot faster than anything, you know, from 3 years ago. But if you're barely using it, Jim, I certainly wouldn't justify, you know, that. you could get away, if you can get away without a 3.5 inch bay, Intel Nooks are still pretty cool, right? Okay. Under, well under 1,000, even fully populated with RAM. You just don't get the storage option. You're lucky if you get the taller one, you have one 2.5 inch bay. So you could put a 2 terabyte spinning drive in there, I suppose. And then one M.2 drive lying down on the motherboard. And you're done. Not very versatile though, right? I'm a guy that likes to tinker and move drives around and move data around because I have, projects that I actually work with the servers and leave them running. So what I'd say to you is I'd first ask you a whole lot of questions about what you're actually doing with it. If what you're doing is not slowing you down with your occasional use of your existing machine, I certainly wouldn't be one to say anyone should buy something new, right? It's just when you get into virtualization with Hyper-V or VMware and you're trying to run multiple copies of an operating system, maybe even boot them at the same time, that's where something like ZND with multiple cores really shines. But if you're really just wanting running one operating system on there, that's a whole different story. There's so many options these days.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've done some virtualization. I've even done some virtualization with Microsoft in the cloud and running these, virtual instances of Windows 10 right off their servers. And I'm even running an instance. I wanted to get a virtual instance off Hyper-V on Windows 10 of a Windows 10 FastRing, instance. And just set that up the other day. I kind of forgot I had, I've got a Core i7 3770 with 16 gig of RAM, and that'll easily run Windows 10 and an instance of Windows 10 pretty easily. I could probably even push one more VM on top of that if I wanted to. And that was a good reminder. I was like, oh, hey, maybe I'll fire this thing back up. And especially with what's coming on Windows 10 with Creators Update and the FastRing's getting really, really close to having all that, kind of the final version of Windows 10 available to the FastRing folks. Although it's still messy, kind of fun to run Hyper-V on top of Windows 10 now. I think I have Windows 10 Pro here on the desktop. And it's kind of fun to spin that one up. I've also got a physical box running Windows 10. So that's a good way to run that Cortana and some of those other things. I can't say that too loud. Have you messed around much with the FastRing Windows 10, some of the stuff that they're doing, or are you pretty consumed with stuff on the server side?
Well, the new job, I'll be a little consumed for only 7 weeks into it. So admittedly, I haven't played with the betas as much. I'm also trying to figure out, my MSDN options, right? Changing jobs. Like, ooh, I had MSDN for 15 years. So I've got some research to do there, right? But what you're talking about is anyone can get, FastRing and sign up for that. And no, I could certainly run it as a VM and it would be harmless to do. And given I can spin up in a VM in under 20 seconds, so I can clone a full copy of Windows 10 on NVMe from what's called a template, a read-only virtual machine. Basically, you right-click it and basically clone it and it turns into a running copy, just like you can on Hyper-V. In under 20 seconds, a whole copy, which is about 15 gig of data. That's incredible. So if you want to mess around with versions, you can snapshot them, roll them back if it goes wrong, or just delete the whole thing and start again. So that's the joy of a home lab. You can really horse around with software a whole lot faster, more effectively than the old days. And Trashna put a really good story here in the chat. He's got, you've got me talking about Supermicro and Little Cubes. Throw that aside and just go back to that acronym SSDs that are NVMe. He's talking about running 20 VMs at the same time on his Hyper-V server. In other words, he's not saying the performance tanks, I don't think. Let's see what he says. But that's the point of the story. You have a storage device that, yes, costs about twice per gigabyte than a regular 2.5-inch SSD would, but at 5 or 6 times the performance. Or when you have multiple VMs on it, it could be 10 or 20 times the performance of an old SATA-style SSD, which really tanks when you try to run a lot of VMs. So Jim, I know you might be skeptical. I'm a speed demon where if I see Windows is supposed to boot in 7 seconds and then I run a virtual one and then I run two of them and they take 3-4 minutes to boot, I'm aggravated. If they're both thrashing over the same 2.5-inch SSD, I'm kind of crazy that way. I know that's not everybody, but virtualization for many VMs that are like beefy and keep your machine busy when you reboot them, that's when having the latest generation of storage really helps. And it's worth every penny of spending a bit more. So yeah, more and more motherboards have M.2 and you can even boot from them. You don't always have bootability. If you have an older one, you might buy a PCI card, throw M.2 in there and give yourself a really fast D drive on a 4-year-old machine, right? That's possible too, people might be wondering. Particularly if they have something called PCI 3.0 slots in their older machine and if they're by 4 lanes, it's called. So if they can meet or exceed that speed, they'll get full speeds on NVMe. That's been a popular article too. Just booting from NVMe is a popular article, or running NVMe for VMware. And then people had trouble with that in the beginning because it's, you know, new BIOS. You need to upgrade your BIOS to boot and install it. And now it's 2 years later and it's gotten pretty easy. I think a lot of people in the chat, I suspect probably more than half of them have M.2 NVMe somewhere in their house on a laptop or Surface or whatever.
Yeah, or in a kangaroo PC.
I've heard you talk about that, yeah.
Yeah, those are M.2, I'm sure they are, from a storage. Although that one's running, still running well. Man, it runs hot sometimes, but it's still running pretty well. For me, Paul, I'll be honest. I've been doing virtualization now for a couple of years. Use Hyper-V mostly because that's what I have access to. Yep. I installed VMware one weekend and messed around with it for a while. And I thought, I need to learn another thing like this. Like, I need a hole in my head. But yeah. For home use, really, I haven't found that many great, that many great uses for having VMs at home. But maybe I'm wrong. When you think about that, I mean, in what you're doing, what are some things that you'd think for the average home user, or maybe above average home user, where VM would come in handy?
OpenVPN is one. That's a popular one. I've spoken to user groups about that 2 years ago. It's downloadable as an appliance. So think of it as you got apps for your phone, you got appliances for your virtualization world. So VMware has this thing called an OVA, an appliance you can download, and so does Hyper-V. And now it's pre-configured by some company. You point your browser to it. Once it's installed, you point the browser to the IP address or name of this VM, this appliance, and you configure it. So OpenVPN is your server in your home lab. Now when you're on the road with your iPhone or Android device, you get to your home seamlessly, and you don't have to pay a monthly bill if you get a little creative with IP changes. So that's one of those projects. Another one would be Plex, right? Or video, picture sharing, any of those projects for home labs. Something you'd leave running for maybe a family personal cloud. I realize there are more and more cloud offerings, but maybe you have some content that you don't really want breached, since everything seems to leak eventually, the internet these days, right? So, and you and I talked about that with Ring Video Doorbell and others, right? You're asking, why do I put that stuff on other networks? How many breaches have you heard since we last talked about stuff, right? It's bad out there. And the whole, what was the thing that took out a lot of cameras, found vulnerable in the web, turned into a giant botnet and killed the performance of the internet, right? So a lot has happened.
DVR or something? It was a DVR, wasn't it? Or something that...
DVRs, that's cameras. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyhow, there's been... putting your Internet of Things devices like a Ring Video Doorbell or a thermostat like I do in my guest Wi-Fi only helps a little. It's still using bandwidth if it was, compromised, right? But at least it's not a attack vector for the rest of my home network.
Yeah.
It's just the guest Wi-Fi, not a big deal.
Speaking of Internet of Things and home automation, any new in the last 6 months or so, any new home automation you've latched onto?
Well, the Eero was my success story from last summer. It's still going strong. I think what I did a little different than Dave and others talking about it is I turned it into bridge mode. I just go into the Eero, configured it, and said, hey, I don't want to use you for DHCP or DNS or any of that. I just turned it into bridge mode. It's like, oh, okay, I'll be your Wi-Fi serving for your house, and that's it. And when I do that, I get like 350 megabits down. My internet provider, sorry, I should mention, is about 350 megabits down, 30 up. With a new device like an iPhone 7 Plus, which is 3 times faster than an iPhone 6 Plus, by the way, I actually get those speeds almost anywhere in the house. It's a complete success story. And I don't say that very often. I had a lot of purple routers over the years, if you ask my kids. There's a pile of them in the basement. So I had a lot of failures with Wi-Fi, like many people, because it just didn't work well all over the house. And Eero was expensive. $500, just dropped to $400 last week, I hear.
Yeah.
For three of them. Not a cheap product, but complete success story. There were some bumpy months where a single Apple device would have some trouble. That seems to all be behind us. There was even on the previous router, what was it? EA6900 Linksys. That thing would have trouble with an older Nexus device when a kid came home from college. Weird, right? Just made it unstable. Annoying as all heck when that kind of junk hits you. Why? Because it's 2 years in the product cycle and you know you're never going to see a firmware fix. So your heart sinks knowing, okay, there goes another router getting ready to join the pile in the basement.
Yeah.
That I'm ready to leave that world behind. I don't love being on the cloud for my router. Google got bit by that and theirs got taken out. People's Google Home mesh device was reset to the defaults, I understand.
Yeah, that's, the mesh rough. I've got the on hub, and I don't think that got hit.
Okay, that's cool.
Because I haven't seen...
That's a rough story, though, if that happened in your mother's or in-law's house or whatever. Now they're all broken, all their Wi-Fi devices. That'd be kind of tough to fix. So there's going to be fails like that in the industry, too, when you go cloud. But the advantages are they can do telemetry. They can see what's failing in your house or what's going on. They can get better. And Eero's been around for a year now, hopefully looking at the telemetry data and seeing what kind of devices have trouble and coming out with firmware fixes that address it, right? So I like that model. I'm not kidding myself, knowing that a year or two from now, they'll be knocked off the throne, or maybe next month, right? Because there's so many entrants in that space. So we keep listening to Dave McCabe's stories, and he has a lot of them, right? He's trying all the products.
Yeah, he's really getting after it.
Yeah. I tried two. I tried Luma and Eero, and then coupled with my Ubiquiti $80 router that's capable of 1 gigabit switching speed. So with 300 megabits in my town, that's a third of a gigabit for download already. So I'm already using a third of the capacity of an $80 switch. But that's a big deal because Linksys and the other consumer ones don't tend to have that kind of speed. So an $80 switch coupled with my Eero, great combo. And it happens to work very well with VMware. So those are my infrastructure stories. They're not really home automation stories. Ring Video Doorbell, that did have some updates. More and more people kept leaving comments on my site about the Ring Video Doorbell not doing as well at 16 volts. So you go out to Home Depot or Lowe's and get yourself a 24-volt transformer that went away for a lot of people. Goofy story, but also kind of nice. It was a long article, took a long time to write, and then you have Jamie Siminoff, the CEO, you know, helping leave comments like, okay, I know you got a lot of complaints, and here's what we're doing. And they fixed a lot of things, like 720p video became the 1080p they promised, and then stability got better for people when tech support finally started telling them, you know what, your transformer in your house's old doorbell might have been 16 volts and 24 volts might do better. If someone's listening, you really should call their support. Don't take my word for that. You don't want to mess with your wiring in your house without talking to an engineer. You got to make sure you have the right category wire, the right gauge. There's a lot to video doorbell support. I don't know how they do it. Same with Wi-Fi thermostats. Every call I make to them, I'm thinking every bit of profit must have gone out with this 40 minutes they just spent on the phone with me, right?
With that one call, they just lost their profit. Yeah, well, they must be selling a lot.
Yeah, those are not easy businesses.
Yeah, I still hear a lot of my friends are, you know, saying they'd picked up the Nest or one of those. Even somebody said Ecobee the other day. And
yep, that's me, Ecobee. Like, I picked up a second one. Yep. And for the second one, I pulled it off the wall, the old thermostat, and discovered my 21-year-old house. Oh, only two wires. That's a problem. You need always power on power. So guess what? You go and buy a 24-volt power brick. The same one I bought for the Ring video doorbell. Bought another one to run my Ecobee downstairs so I didn't have to mess with the existing house wiring. So basically, I just ran new thermostat wire with 7 wires in there from Home Depot through my basement because I could access it. And now I installed the thermostat. But what was supposed to be a half-hour weekend project became, you know, 4 hours to get a drive down.
Chunk of the day.
Yep.
Chunk of the day. Ken's asking in the chat, he may have missed this, but did you speak about VMware Hypervisor at home? Still good free options?
Ah, okay. That's a good question. Yeah, here. Going back, quickly sharing. So I was at a user group today, and we're talking about this. Showing my desktop here. Should bring up Twitter. Yes, but it's tricky. The free one doesn't let you do some of the fun stuff, like storage vMotion. So if you have, I don't know, a VM you like, and it's running kind of slow on your spinning 10 terabyte drive, and you want to move it to NVMe drive I was talking about and run it 5 times, 10 times faster. Well, if you get the free version of the hypervisor, you're not going to have the fun stuff, like deploying from templates or cloning, or you can do it with manual commands, but it actually makes it kind of harder for the person trying to dip their toe into virtualization. The basic free hypervisor you can download and use. You can't use this thing called VCSA appliance with it, or vCenter, also known as. So a vSphere, that word is kind of the enterprise word for a collection of products. This thing called vCenter coupled with ESXi Hypervisor is called vSphere. You can't run full vSphere at home for free, unfortunately. Good news is, this thing on the left, you go to these local conferences like the one in Hartford today, and for $180 at a conference, you now are out of time bomb jail for a year. So you have 365 days. So this is kind of like the MSDN world. And I have an article about eval experience right there explaining all this. And look at my title, right? What MSDN and TechNet is to Microsoft professionals, eval experiences to VMware pros. If you're serious about your career and you use VMware at work, which pretty much there's hundreds of people walking around this Connecticut user group in Hartford I was at speaking at today, just 6 hours ago. it's like 95% plus, Jim. The corporate world is using VMware. They're big, right? You just don't, it's not the name your parents have heard, right? I was talking about life insurance. I'm on the phone with somebody and they go, where do you work? VMware. And they had to spell it. I never had to do that at IBM, right? I know that. I'm aware of that. But yeah, it is a huge company and they have very expensive software, but to do it at home, if you're at all serious about trying to train yourself or get a certification, spend the 180 at your local VMUG user group or 200 online and just get out of 60-day time bound jail or the free hypervisor to really try the whole product.
Pretty reasonable for that. I mean, you're not going to get that. You're not going to get the Microsoft software for that price on an annual.
Yeah. Basis. They did away with, it got worse, right?
Yeah, TechNet got more expensive. Yeah.
So
yeah, they really did. I mean, I'm super fortunate as a MVP to get a really expensive version of TechNet. That helps me get through some of those things, but that's $180. That's fairly reasonable.
And unfortunately it is pickier for hardware, but at least these pre-tested bundles or Tinker Tried, I call it, they work. They're on the VMware compatibility list. That sounds like, well, so what? Why don't I just use it unsupported? Well, the thing is you could purple screen or not even get it to work at all. VMware is a smaller list. Hyper-V runs on a lot of stuff. VMware is tougher. They're very stringent and have performance guidelines and they want everything to work. So I'm quite happy that the Xeon D actually got on the VMware HCL. So when you buy it, you could call and actually get support on Xeon D systems like this. It's the only home lab suited system that's on that. So Core i7 stuff, HP, Dell, all the cubes from 2, 3, 4 years ago, home server stuff, it'll never be on the HCL. It's all Xeon. It's not really consumer stuff. So I'll just point that out, that a turnkey solution that will work with VMware, that's the value of buying or looking into bundles or considering them. Plus the price is the same as putting the parts together yourself anyway. So there's that. And then finally, how do you do it? If you have no clue what you're doing and you've never done it, hopefully there's some videos that'll help you boost your confidence in it. And here's by far and away a popular one that I help. It's a little old now, so I need to get to the vSphere 6.5 or ESXi 6.5, but it walks through every step of the way, and the thing is an hour and 18 minutes. That sounds nuts, but if you get through it, you will get a home lab built. And now flash forwarded today, VMware got a little harder to install, so that $80 router solves that problem. It gets DNS and DHCP working in a way that VMware likes. So I've got that problem licked. So hopefully at some point this year, I get a vSphere 6.5 video out, and that'll be fun because I know that'll help a whole lot of people that basically bail and give up on VMware before. You know, like you, frankly, yeah. you discover yeah. that it has no local user interface. You don't run a GUI, unlike Windows. You're not running games or browser or anything local. There's this yellow interface with a fixed IP address or name, and you walk away. It's meant to be headless, right? That's the jarring thing you probably discovered if you install this somewhere. So my videos and articles try to get people past that hurdle. Once you get past it and realize this is the premium hypervisor that runs a lot of VMs really fast, way better than VMware Workstation or VMware Fusion or other stuff you might have run in your past. Wow, I got kind of heavy on the virtualization, but you're
that's
trying
good.
To. But that's for good. Home people, and if they like software, that's the magic moment when you realize you can create and destroy Windows 10 in 20 seconds. You now can mess around with all kinds of software very quickly on an NVMe SSD where it performs really well. And when you're done, if you don't like how it went, you just delete it and move on. Just that's incredible compared to any workstation product. The speeds are just so much better. Mm-hmm. So yes, there's more effort up front to install a hypervisor for sure. It's more work.
All right, Paul, I want to show you something of mine. So flip your screen off for a second.
And, of course. Sorry, I forgot I left. There we go.
That's okay. Something near and dear here. I'll share that out. You should know, can you see my, you seen my screen yet? Does that,
there's a bit of lag, but now I see it. Oh,
does that look? Look like
I know what this is.
Does this look familiar?
Communications and bandwidth. Oh, I'm angry. You got me going.
You have been warning me for the last couple years that because Nebraska has had unlimited, and they used to send us notes like every once in a while. Hey, you know you're over your usage and blah blah blah, but they never did anything about it. So a month ago, we got an announcement that they give us 2 months of a mulligan, right? And then after that, they're going to start charging. And so I think it's something, it's $10 for 10 gig beyond the 1 terabyte So you can see here, I've got my data plan gives me 1 terabyte there. I've used about 200. Now we're in, I'm halfway through the cycle at least, right? So, and I've only used 200 gigs. So at this point, I am in no spot to worry about it. And I just moved a bunch of files yesterday, so I'm good there. But I thought I'd bring this up to you, Paul, because you've been warning me forever. Like, it's coming, Jim. The throttling's coming. And sure enough, it has arrived.
Yeah, and for me, it wasn't something like BitTorrent. It was actually a kid at college and a VPN in and trying to do daily backups. Well, all that kind of personal cloud stuff from one home to another or dorm or apartment to back to home, that all goes out the window. But more upsetting is 4K Dreams and Netflix, they also go out the window. That's very upsetting. And I'm paying the top tier of, you know, Cox Internet. So it's awesome that it was 300 gig down and 30 up for speed that they bumped me up to like 2 years ago. One of the first people in town with a DOCSIS 3K modem and a connection that could do that. Sounds great until boom, suddenly it's like we're in Australia and it has a stifling effect on innovation for sure. And it just really smacks of a serious problem when it comes to 4K TV on Netflix, yeah. Right? Which will just blow that away. Or when my kids are home for college, it's legitimate use of the internet. You can easily blow through that cap and that upsets me. Okay, fine. I'm an IT pro who's in that top 1% of bandwidth use. But man, am I going to pay dearly if I hit those overages. So I've just logged in off camera here. And now I'm looking at my, did I hit the overage this month or am I near it? Right. I'm checking that out. So that's my take on it, Jim, or site to site replication or personal family cloud or background, all of that. You now get to watch like a hawk. How fun is that? That is not good.
It's you can see the weekends here because I'm moving, you know, podcasting files. So this is a weekend and this is a weekend. And it's just interesting. Like I said, I haven't hit it yet. And I'll probably be mad as hell the first time.
I did hit it in the past before they hit us with this restriction. So they already warned me, meaning if you keep that up, you're going to get hit, right? Okay. So this month looks like I'm fine. Now I got to go to my history. But okay. Anyhow. They've been a company that people didn't bash like Time Warner and Comcast, right? And I've dealt with those companies myself, various family members. And it's just kind of sad that all that good service and 6 truck rolls to my house to get the good internet working, they really did seem to care and, you know, give me a month off a bill or whatever when I had to meet them 7 times at my house for truck rolls, right? They really seemed to want to get me 300 megabytes and they did it, one of the first in town. And then here I am 2 years later lamenting and just super sad. And I tweeted once, not a really angry tweet, but pretty disappointed. And that's the one I sent to you. I don't know. That story's not over yet because they might get Gigablast in my neighborhood. And then guess what? If I pay for Gigablast, even more than I'm paying now, then maybe I get out of that jail for how long? What, 2 months? 2 years? I don't know.
No, you don't.
But you know where they're headed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Tip their hand at that. So I know it's like boohoo me. Australia's had this for years. But again, it's just not good if you're trying to work from home. Like I've done my whole 20-year career, I've always worked from home 1 or 2 days a week. I've used the internet all the way since the ISDN days and used it a lot. So not much more to say there. It's just sad. We saw it coming and it did. But I guess that means 4K TV is not coming soon because how can you do it unless it's from your cable provider?
Right, right. So yeah, I'm sure they'll come up with some packages. I was just kind of waiting, you know, Nebraska, we got away with it for a lot of years and I've had pretty much unlimited since the day I started with Cox, probably when would it be? I was at the Castellar house. So that would have been yikes. When was that? 2008. Way before that. 90. Anyways, we've been on cable for a long time and didn't really have to worry about it. And I kept thinking, nah, they'll never do it. Sure enough, they did it. So it has arrived in Nebraska. I think I'm on my 2nd of 2 months. And so I've been kind of keeping an eye on it, you know, just kind of like, well, you know, am I going to have to worry about it? My daughter leaves this summer for college and we're kind of back to, and I'm not doing too much VPN stuff in the house, so I think I'll be all right, you know. But you're right, it stifles, right, from that standpoint. Paul, thanks for jumping in here tonight. Can you stay around a little bit for a little post show?
That'd be sure. All right. Oh, I just looked at the clock. Wow, time
goes super fast. Oh,
it sure did.
It always does. And I'll remind folks as we kind of wrap things up, we've got some interesting shows coming up over the next couple weeks as we think about. Actually, next week is open. I'll have to get that. I'll have to get that filled in. But we've got some interesting. I'm trying to put the home automation show together. I've got Mike and Mark coming back. They're going to talk about their drones. We've got Valerie from Liberty. We talked about that on when Emily was on. Liberty does this kind of Uber for. No, that wasn't when Emily was on. When that was when Ryan Pendle was on. Rich Hay is going to come back. We're going to talk about with the Windows launch of the Creators Update. So if you haven't stayed up to date with that, Rich is all things Microsoft. So we're going to bring him back in and get that launched. And we've got a bunch of great stuff coming up for you, and we'll mix some things together. Do we need to go to your to you one more time, Paul, before we take off?
No, I was just going to say, if anyone happens to be listening in the New York City area, come see me March 23rd. Like any VMware user group, they're free. You just sign up and shop to the New York Times building right there in Times Square, and you get free breakfast. So there you go. It's always fun to meet people. And yeah, stay tuned. If you live anywhere in the Northeast or follow me on Twitter or whatever, you'll see my travels. I get around a bit. So thanks, Jim, for this.
Yeah, you bet. You're not in D.C. at all this week, are you? I'm in D.C. Monday and Tuesday.
No, I'm not, but I very well could be in that region in the coming months. It's part of
I'll have to, yeah, I'll have to watch that a little more carefully. I've been going out twice in the spring and twice in the fall, and I'll have to maybe plan something around something you're doing so we can get together while we're out there. I always get together with Christian when I'm out there. John, I see John when I'm out there, and some of the other guys that try and track down Chris. Chris Barnes, I probably get with him once every other year or so, but it's great. Well, Paul, again, thanks. Stay around a little bit for the post show. Just a couple reminders. If you want to financially support the show, and a bunch of you do, and I appreciate that, you can do that through the Patreon link. Really easy. $1 and $5 plans, and you can jump in there, and you know, it's your call if you want to do it. TheAverageGuy.tv/support gets you there. I always appreciate it when you do that. And thanks for those that are currently doing it. Don't forget, if you got feedback for the show, or if you got show ideas, or you got people you want me to get lined up, just send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv, and I can get those set up as well. If you haven't followed me on Twitter and you're starting to do that, I just crossed over my 10,000th follower. I think today. Today was the day for the second time. So that's cool. Wow. I had that problem where I got to 10,000 and then they busted.
They pulled it back, right? Or
they busted me for some auto processes, and then took away all my I don't know if it was related, but they took away everybody I was following, and then they added them all back. And man, that caused such ruckus on my Twitter feed. But if you want to track me down on Twitter, I'm pretty active out there. So if you ever want to just chat, that's Twitter's probably the best place to find me, Paul. You tweet really smart stuff to me, so I appreciate it when you usually when I get a tweet from you, it's always good stuff. So I appreciate that. Don't forget the AverageGuy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high speed hosting from people you know and you trust. It's Christian. He's been doing a ton of upgrades to it. As well, plans for any podcaster or anybody needing a site, as little as $10. So $10 a month gets you in. For more information, visit maplegrovepartners.com. Don't forget, we broadcast live on WLMN Radio, Grafton, West Virginia. Someday I'll get out there to listen to them. We thank Roger for streaming us out there. And then you can also listen to Home Gadget Geeks, both on the Android and iPhone app that's available out there. Thank LastPass for their sponsorship of that. And they're another DC company. I think I don't have plans to go out there and see them, but it's always good to stop in. I try to stop in at the headquarters there and see them when we're out there. But thank LastPass for their sponsorship. Yeah, Paul's showing here. Well, I'll put that up. Paul is showing, if you're watching the video, 10.1. I don't know why it was a goal, Paul.
I put my mouse over it, and you're actually at 10,065 followers. Congratulations.
65. That went over today. It was a game, you know, for me. It was like, could I do it? And it wasn't even about the followers. It was just about, could it get done? You know, it was my, I guess it's my version of Pokemon Go. You know, I'd find ways to follow people and get them to follow me back. And I don't know if it's added anything to it, but it's been a ton of fun. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv live. Got some great shows coming up for you. We're heading into the summer. And again, we'll thank Paul for coming out. And don't forget tinkertry.com. All those, everything we talked about, if you didn't catch the video, you can head out to a site. You may get lost. You might want a whole weekend there because there's so much great content on the site. You could get, well, you could be setting up a VM server before you know it. And with 635,000 people who've watched that video, I think that's the number or something I saw there, 665 or something like that. Many people have watched Paul's video. So with that, we'll say goodnight, everybody.